believe that everybody should be born poor 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own bed, different. And when we get a new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth, who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. Yeah, I'm down here with Julian doing some outreach with the outreach volunteer coordinator, Addison Winslow, and she wanted to tell her story a little bit and some of the challenges that she has. Welcome to KZFR.
Hi there. Well, I was just saying that, there's always a story behind how someone becomes homeless, and my personal story is that it was a tragedy in my life without a support system, and then coming out here to among the homeless, there isn't a funding category that I fall into to which I could get back on my feet. And then once Paradise happened, I really didn't fall into any category, and so I'm out here just trying to do the best I can and without any support system. And now that the whole city has been shut down due to the virus and the shelter-in ordinance in the city, the lack of resources is nil. I mean, just absolutely nothing.
Can you elaborate? I know you were talking a lot about the challenges of the woman out here on the streets with sanitation and cleaning your hands. Maybe a little on that.
Well, I find it counterproductive that the city has shut down any sort of access to any sort of clean water, hot water, showers. A lot of the areas that do have a bathroom don't have soap or hand sanitizer. The women who have a menstrual cycle, where are they supposed to go to change, you know, and keep clean? It's completely counterproductive in their goal or their reasoning, because it opens the door to an array of other sorts of infections and exposures, and without any sort of resources. What the community may not know is that the Jesus Center is almost completely shut down. There is no entry into the Jesus Center for things like telephones, computers to get to the family, or check resources, clothing, food, hygiene. You do get there twice a day and get a box meal in line for the six feet apart, and then you move on. And that's it. You can get your mail to a slot in the door. That's it. So there is absolutely nothing for those who are out here that need more things to keep clean, to stay dry, to stay warm. There's nowhere that the city has nowhere for us to go.
So for your living situation, maybe give some guidance to whoever's listening, and I'll send this to the city staff of where you think they should be dropping some sanitation that would assist you and other campers that are sheltering in place during a pandemic.
You know, the main thing I could say is where you see us in the parks and stuff like that, you know, don't be afraid to come up and offer the sanitation means and such like that. Any of the parks that we're at, if we have the provision, we will utilize them, especially when it comes to hygiene products. Or warm hot water, or means to make water warm, you know. And I know a fire would probably not be the best idea, but some sort of enclosed stove, if there was, you know, some that work with heat water for food or nutrients and cleaning. So
give us some hope.
What the city is really lacking is humanity. And bottom line, whether you live in a mansion or if you live under a bridge, we're all human first.
Yeah.
And say hello. You'd be surprised.
All right, Daniel Mash here for the April 29th edition of the Without a Roof radio program. I guess I got to put a stop command in there. I'll do that right now. Welcome to Without a Roof radio program. Daniel Mash, your host. Say hello. Saying hello from the KZFR 90.1 FM studios. And interestingly enough, where Julian, someone that I met with Addison doing some outreach. Gosh, the time is flying so much. I don't remember if it's this week or last week. I think it was last week. But in any event, she talked about how the city's not even supplying any kind of sanitation. I was down doing some outreach in little Chico Creek down by the VA, and I asked the folks how they're doing, and they're like, oh, we're all right. I mean, if you're homeless, man, you're like having a crap in a bucket, and you got to trudge for food and water. But they were kind of distressed. They said, oh, the park, that little park over here, they shut the water off. And I went over there. They did. Shut the water off. I guess I'm going to have to check on that. But anyway, if you see someone out there, be kind. Be kind. Game on Mash here, Without a Roof radio program. welcoming you. We it was a crazy day today. I did a whole bunch of like phone calls around a whole bunch of stuff. So editorial staff of one, I've kind of mixed some things up. I'm going to move some interviews I had with Paul Bowden, my dear friends out of Humboldt County, Nezzy Wade and Deborah Carey, to another show. But today we do have special guest Sherry McCracken, Chief Administrative Officer for Butte County Administration. Eric Gustafson, Director of Public Works for the City of Chico, and weekly updates from Joy Amaro, Homeless Solutions Coordinator for the City of Chico, and Addison Winslow, the Chico Homeless Encampment Volunteer Coordinator. Going to take a break here, 1 second. All right, I'm back. 10 seconds of silence and remembrance of folks that are outdoors. Essentially, I wanted a couple of things I want to start with here before I get into the meat of the program. Essential businesses, man, the difference between essential businesses and non-essential businesses, there is a difference, irrespective of what was said by the director of economics here and assistant manager last week. He made a comment that, in his mind, all businesses are essential to the city of Chico. Essential businesses are bike repair shops. I was out doing encampment outreach and research for today's show on a loner from Poland's Cyclery on Main Street. But while I'm on that topic, I wanted to close out something that I said I was going to follow up on last week. As folks had listened last week, I wasn't the least bit happy with major portions of the assistant manager for Chico, who was the person that was selected to talk to me about, you know, reopening businesses. But I am glad that Action News had kind of followed up, did some follow-up. This time they talked to the city manager himself, and they got some headlines in there. You want to go out and read it, but the city of Chico says they have not issued any citations or shut down any non-essential businesses down, but that could possibly change. Now, I know they also, in that article, they mentioned that they're going to be sending letters out to non-essential businesses. And I do know that there's one business owner, she's been, I do appreciate her candor. And she owns Eye Candy, this is all in public space on her Facebook. She owns Eye Candy Barbershop on Park Avenue. And literally, she just posted a picture saying, come on down, I'm open. If they want to find me, I'll pay the fines way down the road. She's wearing nothing but her face, and got no protective gear on. And she makes a quote. She quotes Chris Constantine, if you don't like what I'm doing, don't come in. And, you know, I don't want to dwell on this any longer because I think the city gets it. It seems like it gets it now from this Action News that I read. But that's a major public health and safety issue when you're superseding state orders and putting out messages that are putting people that I know in harm's way. It's not a good deal. So we'll leave it at that. Moving on. Actually, it's kind of fun. I had a wonderful conversation with Sherry McCracken, who I said is the Chief Administrative Officer for the Butte County Administration. And she does a wonderful job just describing what they do and kind of touches upon making sure that we're making decisions in the county that follow the state order, and we are under the state order, which defines an essential and non-essential businesses, and that health has to be an integral part of what we do in the decision-making process. So, you know, with no further ado, I'm going to play Sherry McCracken. It's a wonderful interview. I just grabbed that today, like most of the interviews today. I just want to thank everyone for being listeners of People Power Radio.
So what that branch is doing, we're primarily serving the high-risk populations as the
All right, Guillermo Mash here for the April 29th edition of the Without a Roof radio program. And I'm really pleased to have on the line Sherry McCracken, the Chief Administrative Officer for Butte County Administration. Welcome to KZFR, Sherry.
Well, thank you, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I always like to know a little bit about the person, especially someone I've never spoken with and someone that has such a huge responsibility in the pandemic and post-pandemic, but maybe a little short bio for our listeners.
Sure. So as you said, I'm Sherry McCracken. I'm the Chief Administrative Officer for the county. I'm a Chico State alumni with a bachelor's degree in economics, and I've actually lived off and on in Butte County since the late 70s. And I'm currently a resident of Chico. Little personal stuff, I'm the proud mom of three adult children, and I have one precious granddaughter.
Nice.
I've primarily worked, I've primarily worked in the public and nonprofit sectors during my over 35-year career, with a stint in the healthcare industry in the 80s. And my county experience includes Plumas County, Sonoma County, and Butte County.
Oh, so you've got some rural counties and some not-so-rural counties, because Sonoma's a pretty good-sized county, correct?
It is, yep. It's one of the Bay Area counties.
Well, thank you for all that, all your work experience and responsibilities, and that's a good segue, actually. What are the responsibilities of the Butte County Chief Administrative Officer?
I have to tell you, my children ask me that every day of my career. So as the what do you do? As the Chief Administrative Officer, some of my general responsibilities include things like implementing and enforcing policies established by the Board of Supervisors. I'm responsible for managing the day-to-day operations of the county. I analyze a diverse array of subjects and make recommendations to the board on those matters. I'm responsible for preparing the annual recommended budget for the county. I frequently am facilitating discussions and collaborating internally and externally to improve practices for greater efficiency and effectiveness of county business. And I propose revisions to county code. Now, I have to add the caveat that this is all, of course, done in coordination with my staff and 23 county departments. I also serve as the clerk of the board, and I oversee preparation of the board meeting agendas, including determining if items should be submitted to the board for consideration. And I also make recommendations on particular items. And then finally, the reason we're on this call today is during emergencies and disasters, I serve as the director of the county's Emergency Operations Center, which I have to say has been quite frequent over the past few years.
It sure has. This is the second time, obviously, in the last 2 years. So maybe educate our listeners on what EOC is and the response at the county level. And as I had spoken with Sherry offline, is, you know, some of the leaders and decision makers and what their roles and responsibilities are in the county's response.
Sure, and this will be interesting. Emergency management, the emergency management system in the state of California is really complex, and so it usually takes a bunch of visuals to really explain what's going on. So I'm going to try to do this verbally. It may not completely come across as clearly as when I have visuals. And COVID-19 is a unique emergency. It's a health emergency. So the structure for a wildfire or a flood, or in our case when the spillway went, is a little different. The EOC's role was a little different than what it is in a health emergency. So let me give a stab at this. So COVID-19 obviously impacts jurisdictions statewide, and it's not just a portion of local jurisdictions, which we typically see in emergencies. So right now, the state holds the authority. The governor's and the state health officer's orders are the minimum requirements within California, though it does allow local jurisdictions to have stricter orders if they feel it's necessary. And so we've seen that in some of the Bay Area counties. They've actually done stricter orders than what the governor has ordered. And counties and cities are not allowed to have less restrictive orders at this time. Again, the state's orders are the minimum.
The state's orders are the minimum.
And there is not a local order in Butte County, so Butte County and the cities within Butte County are currently under the governor's order. And I think the primary reason would be because our numbers to date have not supported putting in stricter requirements. Now, per state,
we certainly haven't seen anything at the exact moment that we would loosen those requirements.
State law, as you talked about, who's who in the zoo. Per state law, the local health officer and the public health director hold certain authorities during a health emergency, and they manage the incident similar to how a fire chief or an incident management team might manage a wildfire. That's probably what most people are familiar with in our area. And because of that, I recommend you schedule a time to actually talk to Dr. Miller, our health officer, or Danette York, our public health director, to really get the details behind that public health operation, because that's where all those activities are happening. such as planning for testing, surge capacity planning with hospitals, ordering of all the health and medical related resources that are needed. And it's where the majority of communication from the governor's office and the State Department of Public Health takes place regarding orders, reduction of restrictions, and potential planning for reopening. So I think that will be a good kind of follow-up interview.
The Butte County Health Director has done a wonderful job. He's got some series of YouTube videos, and I think he's done an exceptional job of keeping us prepared and, you know, on the dime. So I'd love to interview him. I'll reach out to him next week.
Yeah, I would reach out to Dr. Miller, and he has been a very strong advocate for the North State down in Sacramento. He sits on the testing task force. He is the reason, and he would probably tell me not to say this, but he's the reason we're getting that testing site in Butte County. He fought hard and really rallied to get testing up in the North State because it was not coming up to our area. So in most health emergencies, the county's Emergency Operations Center wouldn't even open, and I'm going to call it the EOC for short. In this case, the resources needed to support our residents, the individuals, the businesses that are so impacted by the event caused public health to reach out and say, will you open the county EOC to support our efforts? Because we can't do it all. We don't have the resources. So the EOC opens up to address the non-medical, non-health specific support that's needed. And in this particular event in COVID-19, we serve four general purposes. We're supporting public health where they request it. We are supporting the county's continuity of operations. As the county can't completely shut down to the public, we have to continue and provide many statutorily required services. So we needed to put things in place so staff could work remotely, so we have good safety measures in place as we're interacting with the public or with each other. The third thing is we're here to support other local jurisdictions. So if a city needs to do something and it goes beyond their ability to get resources, they can come to the county and we can then push their requests up to the state. So we're supporting our cities and our town and some other public agencies. And of course, we're supporting our residents. And that's primarily through the EOC's Care and Shelter branch. And again, I'm going to give you an overview of what that branch is doing, but I would recommend you interview Shelby Boston, who is the director of the county's Department of Employment and Social Services and is serving as the county's Care and Shelter branch manager, to really provide you details behind what I'm going to address.
All right, we'll take a little break here to do some underwriter, but folks just joining, this is Guillermo Mash, Wild Roof Radio program on KZFR 90.1 FM. You're listening to an interview I did just today, just a couple hours ago, with Sherry McCracken, Chief Administrative Officer for Butte County Administration. And Without a Roof, we're made possible. Generous contributions, KZFR supporters, and by Mountain Sports, providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, cross-country skiing, camping, and just enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports is located in downtown Chico at 176 East 3rd Street. Their telephone number is 345-5011. Without a Roof is also made possible by the Bankruptcy Law Offices of Michael O'Hayes, a proud supporter of community radio. Michael O'Hayes offers consultations for Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies for residents of Northern California for over 30 years. The telephone number for Michael O'Hayes, spelled H-A-Y-S, is 892-8916 or mhslaw.com. I did want to skip one thing when we were talking about reopening businesses in Butte County. Is look what happened. I'd seen a follow-up from the assistant manager in regards to, you know, what I had asked him about on radio last week, and he deferred to the press release that's out. Didn't want to confuse people any further. I do appreciate that, Chris, because not only were some people not confused, because your words were very succinct, what you said is what you said, and people are repeating them like businesses that are open right now, like don't come in if you don't want to come in. That was on the radio. But I saw this, very first thing I read, because it pumped out. New Zealand says it has won the battle against COVID-19. This is from Monday the 27th. Check this out. This is an excerpt. Businesses and professions that require face-to-face contact, such as hairdressers, salespeople, masseuses, and public gyms, will remain closed until the alert is reduced another notch, the prime minister said. Now back to Sherry McCracken here on People Powered Radio.
So what that branch is doing, we're primarily serving the high-risk population as defined by the state. So that includes individuals 65 years of age and older or with chronic health conditions, whether they're sheltered or unsheltered. So we are working with the unsheltered population, the homeless population. We also are working with individuals who have tested positive for COVID-19 and do not need hospitalization, but they do need services such as food or medicine delivery so they can remain self-quarantined or isolated, whether it's in sheltering the county's providing or in their own homes. And then finally, we're serving those who have been exposed to COVID-19 and need some support to remain in self-quarantine. And so services that I'm sure you've heard about include things such as provision of hotel or motel rooms for those without shelter that need to quarantine or isolate. And we're working in partnership with the homeless service providers and the hospitals on that. We're providing delivery services to those quarantined or isolated, whether at home or in an alternate site and without a support system to provide food and other critical goods. And in the future, Shelby is working on an emergency feeding program that was just announced by the state, and I would hope we would have details on that by next week.
Ooh, that's a... Let me just pause real fast on that one. So when you say emergency feeding, that would be throughout the counties, a certain municipality? You don't need more? I need to talk to Shelby.
You need to talk. I'm not going to... I won't ruin it. Shelby can fill you in.
Thank you, Sherry.
We're waiting on state guidance, so she won't have details yet, but I would hope by the end of the week or the beginning of next week, she'll be able to provide some good details. When we spoke yesterday, you mentioned funding that flows through the EOC. Do you want me to talk about that?
I do. Actually, that's how I kind of got this whole EOC conversation with Joy Amaro from the Homeless Solutions Coordinator here in Chico. Yeah, how does the money flow?
Okay, so typically in emergencies, there is no money that flows into the EOC. So typically we are incurring costs on the county's behalf, or we're incurring costs because another agency or jurisdiction has come to us asking us to help them get a good or service. And then what happens is if we are able to procure that good or service, the agency that requested it actually has to pay for it. So if it was for the county, we pay for it. If the city requested it, the city pays for it. And then we can submit claims for eligible costs through FEMA and the state. So they don't give us money up front. Typically, now in this particular emergency, COVID-19, there have been some federal and state funding sources made available to cities, to counties, and to other entities such as the local continuum of care, which I know you're familiar with. And that funding can be used to support some of the activities, though that funding goes directly to the agencies. It doesn't come through the county's emergency operations center. And so when their bills come to them, they can use some of that funding to pay for it. And I want to make it clear, especially for COVID-19, the county's EOC, again, is supporting non-medical and non-health-related resource requests. Anything medical or health-related from hospitals, even from homeless service providers, goes through public health.
Just a quick comment on the, you know, incoming, outcoming invoices. So if the city of Chico, per se, since we're in downtown Chico, had submitted something to the EOC, the city has to pay for it. How is that arrangement set up? Do they have to pay for it before they get the service, or do they get an invoice with like a net 60? Or what's the operating procedure for the payment?
So the bill comes from the vendor. So the terms could be whatever the vendor's terms are. But no, they don't pay up front. Okay. They receive the good or service. Then they receive a bill. Then they gather all their bills together, and then they put together a claim to go to FEMA or the state. And sometimes those claims will come through the county, and we'll put them all together on behalf of all the jurisdictions. Sometimes they do them directly to FEMA and the state. But the piece, I think there's been a misunderstanding that because the county runs emergency operations during a lot of these emergencies, that it's also responsible to pay for everything, and that's not how it works in the state's emergency system. The requesting agency is the one responsible for payment, and ultimately FEMA and the state typically don't reimburse 100%, and so that agency is also responsible for whatever portion of local share of cost is left. So that's a whole lot of bureaucratic discussion about how the funding flows. But I know some people think either we're given money to do this or the county pays for everything, and neither of those are true.
Oh, there's a lot of misconception about the money part of it, and I think you did a wonderful job, you know, distilling it down. So what I would ask is maybe some closing comments and a message of hope, Sherry.
I would love to do that, and everyone who knows me knows I'm the eternal optimist. So in closing, first of all, thank you, and thank your station for your continued coverage of COVID-19. I have heard some of your shows, and I appreciate it. And thanks to the individuals, the businesses, the community and faith-based organizations, all the levels of government who did what they could at the state direction to keep our numbers in Butte County low, because we have been so fortunate. And I see hope in that the state is talking about phases for reopening, which was not even a topic open for discussion a few weeks ago. So that gives me hope. And local reopening planning efforts, such as the one we just started in Butte County this week, I believe can show the governor and can show the state health officer that there are thoughtful, science-based, phased approaches that can work on a local and regional level instead of this one-size-fits-all statewide approach, which we know does not work. What works in San Francisco doesn't work in Northern California all the time. We know that reopening will never be fast enough for some, and it will be too quick for others. But I hear messages of balance at all levels of discussion, all levels of government, when I'm talking with individuals, no matter which side they stand on this issue. And there are broad acknowledgments that public health is impacted by much more than just this virus, that the prevalence of people who've lost their economic foundation, the increased violence seen in law enforcement calls, and the long-term isolation from others all have public health impacts of their own. And so we have to find that path forward with balance. So I encourage people to continue safe practices to show that we can, through a phased approach, reopen without dire consequences. And I believe that to my core. So that's all I got for you.
Thank you, Sherry McCracken. And tune in tonight. You'll be able to hear yourself live. Well, not live, pre-recorded. KZR 90.1 FM. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill. Take care.
All right, that was wonderful. Thank you for that, Sherry. And now we're going to get into the weekly updates. You know, weekly updates without a roof. We've been having Joya Morrow, the Homeless Solutions Coordinator for Chico, and followed by Addison Winslow out there doing the Homeless Encampment Outreach Volunteer Coordinating. And then we're really blessed to have Eric Gustafson, sorry, another interrupt here. Eric Gustafson, the Public Works Director for the City of Chico. But before that, I was telling Joy this a little story about some of the outreach, you know, that Addison and I did this Monday. And I hope I can kind of do this justice, telling a verbal story. But we were down by Big Chico Creek, pretty close to downtown, and we're running out of burritos. We had some burritos, so we came up and I gave her a burrito to someone, and I went over to the other encampment to check on a woman who, her encampment looked a little distraught a little bit, and talked to her some. But I came back to the encampment, and the guy who had been gifted the burrito from the girl in the camp, I gave it to her, she gave it to him. He was crying, man. He was sobbing in his hands, and Addison was, you know, consoling him and asking him what's wrong and how's things going. But he was just so broke. He was just so torn that he couldn't find work, and he was stuck here, you know, living by a creek in a pandemic, and he was just overwhelmed. And it was a really poignant scene. And, you know, if that had been all, that would have been enough, you know, as far as the humanity. But on our way out, we saw one woman who was just literally hysterically crying, lying by a tree, and we approached her, you know, in obvious distress, and we asked her. We said, hey, can we help you? What can we do? And she pointed towards a camp we'd come from. We'd spent about 10 minutes burrito in a camp talking with the folks. Go get Smokey for me. Go get Smokey. So we went over there. We asked for Smokey. And the guy that was Smokey immediately had a look of concern on his face, you know, that he was going to go help his friend. And while he was walking over, Addison and I were actually getting ready to leave. You know, we were heading towards the car, and he says to me, he says, you guys got a cigarette? And I'm like, man, I'm sorry, I don't. I really was. But I got in the car with Addison. I'm like, you know what? He's going over there. He's trying to console someone that's hysterical. And he needs a cigarette. We need to get him a cigarette. So I went to 7-Eleven. I got a cigarette. Brought it back. Addison stayed in the car. I brought the cigarettes down. But by then, the woman was in the campment. There's three men there. And all three of the men were distraught, not mad or angry, but they were like, what is wrong? What's going on for this woman? And he said, Smokey, what's up with her? And he said, I'll never forget this. He said, she thinks she's going to get COVID-19 and die. And she was still just lying there sobbing uncontrollably. So when you hear advocates or people, you know, out there doing outreach and stuff that are really exasperated with this, the response, we're happy for some things. A lot of things we're not. You know, just have some grace and think about the things we see and the poor people that actually are experiencing them. We only have to kind of come in for a little bit and leave. You know, if you have a roof, be grateful. But anyway, that was my little lead-in for that. And I just appreciate all the outreach workers. And it's an interesting environment. I've never done outreach in this kind of environment where the people have much more feeling of community because they know law enforcement isn't going to come and, you know, they haven't been getting bugged, you know. But as I mentioned in the early part of the hour, we're going to talk about that a lot here. Sanitation's a big issue. You know, folks haven't had showers, water, basic essentials that, you know, we kind of take for granted. You know, not having to take a crap in a bucket and wondering where to put it. You know, these are the things that when you're out on the street you have to deal with. And most of these folks, they just kind of, I'm not going to say grin and bear it. Everyone's got their way of dealing with it. But these people are heroes for having to deal with what they have to deal with. Absolutely. I honestly believe that majority of listeners are lucky and have no real concept because they haven't been out there. And blessings to all them. But here we go. Joey Morrow, Homeless Solutions Coordinator for the City of Chico here on People Powered Radio. Gamble Mash here for the April 29th edition of the Vlada Roof Radio program on KZFR. And as we've done since I've come back on air, we do a wonderful informative weekly meeting with the Homeless Solutions Coordinator of the City of Chico, Joy Amaro, and she's on the line right now. Thank you, Joy, for joining us this week and all the other weeks.
Thank you for having me.
So, Joy, I've gone out with your wonderful, I can't say enough kudos for your volunteer coordinator, Addison Winslow. He's doing an amazing job. I went out with him and by myself and asked people, you know, how are things going? And the number one thing now is sanitation. So I was wondering if you could give us an update on where we are with new sanitation stations and wash stations and maybe the trash pickup.
The first thing I just need to clarify is that Addison is with True North, because you said it was with me.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, yeah.
And so just to clarify that. But as far as the sanitation, I know that an additional bathroom and I believe hand washing station is going to be posted somewhere by the Jesus Center's property, and I'm working with Eric Gustafson and Shane around the garbage, and so I know that there's emails going around.
So the status really is no new stations have been dropped, or doesn't seem like anything's changed since we spoke last week.
Exactly.
I'll do some follow-up myself. I think it's a public health and safety issue, and the city needs to take some responsibility. I know you only have your responsibility in your one desk, but you know, when I'm down there at a tent, I'm finding out that their needs now down at the VA. I was down there this morning. This one encampment I've kind of come alongside, Joy. They're like, hey, the one park that everyone uses for water is shut their water off. And then I ask them what they're doing for a bathroom, and they're using a 5-gallon bucket. I don't know. It's just really kind of gut-wrenching. And I don't want to go on a rant. But I'll be doing some follow-up with the city after this call. So thank you for that update on the sanitation. What else is going on? What else is going on, Joy? What have you guys been doing the last week?
Just really vetting a lot of different options. I'm not at really liberty to go into detail, but I'm hoping that we'll have some sort of action plan taken perhaps next week.
We had talked a little bit last week about these projects, and you said you weren't at liberty, but then I kind of saw an ER article that talked about, you know, safe places for parking or tent camps, or I don't know, maybe you could dispel those rumors, because I read about some stuff in the ER.
Right, and so those were all vetted and were given to council as possible ideas. So essentially what right now I'm asking service providers if they have the capacity to take on anything like that. So I just know that everyone is currently strapped because of COVID.
Yes.
So trying to ramp something up really fast is difficult.
Well, that makes sense, because I talk to you once a week, and it seemed like it got vetted, and the ER covered that and put it out there, which is fantastic. So there'll be something else coming. I like that.
Yeah, so I just have been doing some inventorying of current practices and then also what other service providers might have in the pipeline. And then obviously because you don't want to duplicate efforts, and I'm just looking at streamlining and maximizing everything. So it takes time.
Yeah, Jen, I'm glad you're on your desk. Any closing comments or, you know, something that you think will, you know, impact our folks that are out there outdoors by the end of the week?
Well, some great news is that some folks that are in the motels are being housed.
Nice. That's always a good news.
Yeah, so three people were housed last week. Four people are being housed today. On Friday, I believe six to eight people will be housed. So they're, you know, really working on those.
And that's through True North, through that are
yes.
doing the housing. Wonderful. Yes. Is that transitional or permanent?
It's permanent.
That's wonderful news. That is wonderful news. A clap.
That is wonderful news. Yeah,
yeah, so, you know, I was talking.
You've got, you know, I'm thinking 15, 16 people.
That's wonderful. And the most vulnerable population to boot. And that's the only reason they're in that hotel. That's what I've been telling people on the street, Joy. They're like, I wish I could get into a hotel. I'm like, well, maybe you don't want to qualify because these are the most vulnerable population. So just that's a great news. Thank you for sharing that. Anything else before we close?
No, I think that's it.
I appreciate all you're doing. And until next week.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
All right, listeners just joining. We are with Addison Winslow to do our weekly update from the Homeless Encampment Outreach Coordinator, Volunteer Coordinator. And welcome back to KZFR every week there, Addison Winslow. Appreciate it.
Yes, Bill. Happy to.
Yeah, so why don't you give us a little bit of how this past week has gone, your challenges and successes, and what stories do we need to know?
Ooh, well, I mean, everything's going as smoothly as one could expect. We're getting food to more people. We're, I think, like building some tighter relationships with some encampments and making sure that there's like know that they'll get regular trash service and stuff. And I think that's really starting to improve. Yeah, we've been getting more food out to people. We've had volunteers making food at their houses. And,
nice.
So we've really been able to step up that and get closer. We've gotten a lot of tents out to people. We got some money from General DSA. True North has put down a lot more money for tents and such so that people can have their little like self-contained areas. A lot of people, they've had their tents stolen or they just never had them and do like the cowboy camping thing. And I think it helps a lot for them to have like a space just to put all their stuff. And then a lot more people do have that now. So I think we can expect the type of encampment like along Ant Glen where you have these like nice neat tents just set up in a row that's even like on a trail that isn't like an auxiliary trail so people can go around them. I think more of the encampments can look closer to that. I'll say one major hiccup. It's like an ongoing hiccup. I guess it could be more like a grow up or something that's going on right now. That some of the encampments, which I think are the best situated to shelter in place, are the people that I know do stay in their camps all the time. They're the people that are very clean, and we've been able to do like regular some trash pickup for them in Comanche Creek along a road. The city decided that they're going to start paving that road or dumping gravel on it, so they're going to bring heavy machinery out. It's going to kick up a lot of dust, and they're asking us to help relocate about 15 or 16 people along that. Like I said, the people that are in, I think these are really good camps. They're not on the side of the creek. The runoff is not directly into the creek for when it rains. It's not just going to wash stuff in there. Places that I've recommended bathrooms nearby, and I recommend other people go and set up camp in those places because they just feels like not, and it's not an especially ecologically sensitive area because it's easily serviceable by us. And now all those people are going to have to move somewhere else. In Comanche Creek, I don't think there's better places. So we're currently working that out. Joy Amaro went out with the Sergeant Sandoval of the Target team and talked to them all. And yeah, I'm a little disappointed that for weeks been like dealing like working with all those people there and kind of setting up systems, then encouraging them to be staying where they're at by bringing as much food as we can to them. And now all of a sudden there's this like, oh, like May 4th or something, they're going to start construction, so everybody needs to relocate.
I did see a press release on that, and I don't know. I'm kind of like this guy that's always looking on the bright side. I'm like, they couldn't possibly be doing construction there if they have to, like, evict people. And so it is kind of disappointing that that's kind of what's happening. It makes me wonder if that's the most important thing to be spending city and money on right now. Folks, it's John. We're talking with Addison Winslow, the Homeless Encampment Outreach Coordinator. And it's nice to have money, Addison. This is something I need to get some insight from you. I've done a couple of calls. I interviewed Joy today, who said that they've made the decision to drop one one hand washing station and one bathroom outside the Jesus Center. So I was very fortunate, and we're going to hear a whole interview from Eric Gustafson himself. But I talked to him on the phone, Addison, and this is what he told me. He said, yeah, when the city council allocated all that money last week, they just allocated money for one drop. And I was like, well, that's a big discovery, because that's not what people understood. So maybe a little insight from you on what your understanding was, but maybe more importantly is, where should we be putting these? I told Gustafson we really need one at Comanche Creek, so it seems like they solved that problem. They're just going to do construction and kick everyone out. And the other one was at the VA. If you've got any other ideas, let's get that out there.
We put in recommendations based on what we got, like quantitative data on how many people are within or like over a half mile from different bathrooms and washing stations. And there was two like serious recommendations where there was like 25 plus people that had their nearest access to a bathroom would be one where we recommended it. One of it, yeah, they're clearing. They want to start construction and clear out the people in that area. So that would push them all closer to the other bathroom, putting people in a lot closer quarters. Definitely like 50 people to one bathroom is probably a lot, although they are servicing them well, I must say. But yeah, the other was in around, not in, but near the triangle where Pine and Cypress Streets converge, Mulberry. And because it is it's like 0.4 miles to the Humboldt Park bathroom hand washing station, they didn't take our recommendations on those. I don't know. So we tried to stay where we thought the best bathroom hand washing station would go. That and on the Lino Channel too. I said in the underpass in Bidwell Park. There's a lot of people that camp further up there, and once it starts raining, everybody goes underneath there anyway.
Yeah.
And none of our recommendations were taken.
Yeah, they're saying they didn't have enough money to do it. So I'm going to be bird dogging that one. But I did ask Eric Gustafson, well, if you had the money, would you put him in there? And he's, you know, yeah, we certainly would consider that. You know, we run on a tight budget. I don't know. I was a little disappointed because I'm probably not the only one that misunderstood. I'm assuming his information is accurate. I'm going to be doing my own research, though, that the city council didn't really approve hand washing stations and sanitation during COVID-19. This was like a long-term thing. That's not what I came away with, so. Anyway, I really appreciate all the efforts you're doing out there. Give us some hope, Addison. I always like to end with hope.
On some of that, you know, I think we're doing really good stepping up trash service and stuff. We have so many volunteers being active, and that's just really hopeful. The fact that we have the money that we have for food and such, we're going to try and raise more money, and that's going really far. It's helping a lot of people. It's just being impactful. When it comes to money from the city, sort of like next level stuff, servicing porta potties, It seems like city staff should have made a recommendation or should have asked for more money. I feel like the city council would have approved it. The city council should go forward, do their own research to determine how much money is needed to get all the bathrooms that are needed to make sure that people aren't walking a half mile to a bathroom, which the reality is people don't walk a half mile to use the bathroom.
They don't. That is the reality, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah, then they should ask for more money. I think there's a city council meeting next week.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, if there's not enough to take our recommendations where we're doing the outreach and we're counting the people and we're even pinning like roughly where they're at to demonstrate the need, then they should ask for more money for it because we're in an emergency and there's no rainy day fund for anything but a time like this. So.
Gosh, it would have been really nice for all these people we've been talking to for the last 2 weeks going, it's nice you're giving us input, but we don't have any money to do it. So now we've wasted 2 weeks expecting they were going to do something, only for them to come back and go, oh, yeah, it's too bad we don't have any money. What the hell's up with that? Right? That's how I'm feeling.
That is essentially what happened, yeah.
That's essentially what happened. I like to talk about what essentially happened. That's part of the whole gig. All right, my friend. Thanks for everything.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Be well. All right, without a roof made possible, generous contributions, KZFR supporters, and by Foods, with an organic, non-GMO, whole foods, some fish and dairy-free menu, open 12 noon to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Their full menu is at iloveomfoods.com for pickup orders, for pickup only orders. Social distancing is required. Orders will be on the tables with your name on them. Please wait outside till your order is ready. Om Foods thanks you for keeping the community safe. Details, 530-965-5263 and by Peterson Tree Care. Peterson trees need care. John Peterson continues his family tradition of caring for Chico's natural resource. Licensed, bonded, and insured with financing available. Peterson Tree Care handles residential and commercial properties and can be reached 518-0924. As I do it in all my segments, my favorite thing that I do is talk to people experiencing poverty and destitution, homelessness, living their lives. And it's a good
It's a good segue into the interview with Eric Gustafson, because we're talking about sanitation, and we're talking to Larry and Danny. They've been one of my I've given them more than five or six burritos apiece over the past 5 or 6 weeks. And anyway, no further ado. Peepaw Radio. So I'm here back in Horseshoe Park. You know, I took like 5-6 days off, so it's been a couple of weeks since I've seen Larry and Danny. Larry and Danny, welcome to KZFR.
Thank you.
How you doing? How's it going with you?
Good. You know, it was a beautiful scene, man, for someone covering this beat. I was talking to Larry. There was a bunch of trash lined up over here by the Horseshoe Pit, and didn't look so good, but it was, you know, people had put some effort into it. Larry had said, hey, he kind of helped put that over there, but they haven't been doing so well with the trash, Larry says. Within 20 seconds, here comes waste management. They pull up with really good, the guy's got a face shield, the whole nine yards, and they took the trash away. And Larry and Danny, they jumped right up and they helped them put it in the truck. How cool was that, Larry?
It was pretty cool.
Yeah? But you were saying they haven't been doing such a good job with that. What's been the deal the last couple of weeks since I've been here?
Just massive amounts of garbage. But at least it's going into garbage cans and not just spread out everywhere.
Who's been picking it up before the waste management? People would come by with trucks, or what's been going on? I know Butte County Sheriff was out here a couple of times. They're not coming around anymore?
The little home invasion crew? No, they haven't been because of this whole virus thing.
Flash update on that one. I actually went through Lower Bidwell today, and that crew was out there cleaning up Lower Bidwell Park. They're back.
I don't know. They're not supposed to move us around. Not supposed to mess with us until this whole thing's lifted. Thanks to Alex Brown.
Yeah, thanks to Alex Brown. We're shouting out Alex Brown. So it's been a couple of weeks. How's it been the last couple of weeks since that prior interview?
It's been.
Have they been pushing you around? Has things gotten better?
No. They haven't been pushing us around.
Nice. Thank you, Chico PD in the city. It's gotten tougher? Danny, how's it gotten tougher?
In being in my situation, getting food and even finding any place to shower really is off the record showers. Right now. It's really a bad thing.
Not only that, but charging cell phones, huh?
Well, I'm not too good on electronics myself, but the shower thing is, it's a necessity that I can't find now. I couldn't tell you, to be honest, how many days it's been since I've had a shower.
I should go and today I told a good friend of mine I was going to try to hit Dollar Tree and get a bunch of baby wipes. You guys use baby wipes?
Yeah.
That's oh yeah, baby wipes.
Actually,
I'll be back here tomorrow with baby wipes.
That'd be great. I could use some, but actually I've been using some of the water and soap and towels from the little hand wash units they got out. But other than that, I don't know what to do. I used to go to the JC and use their showers, but the place is closed down now.
Yeah. I'll check with the Homeless Solutions Coordinator to see if they're looking at bringing some shower units in. I know they had one in Butte County.
Do you find out anything? Maybe when you come back by, you might be able to leave us a note or drop by and say something to one of us is here.
I'll end it with you this week, Danny. I asked Larry for some hope the last time. Give us some hope, Danny, for our listeners.
I wish everybody well. I hope this ends in a great way and everybody stays safe and keep your heads about you is what I can say.
Yeah, I want to see you after the pandemic, Danny.
All right.
Well, and during and after.
You will.
All right.
Okay, take care. God bless you all.
All right, Susan in the house for her show. Just a quick update because I do appreciate the Jesus Center. I'd done a social media post around the whole shower thing, and, you know, the Jesus Center is scoured. I guess that is a good word to use in this situation for some place to get a portable shower. And they've even gone as far as Ohio. And they haven't been successful. So if you have a shower, be grateful. Now up, Eric Gustafson, People Power Radio. All right, Guillermo Mesh here in the, well, gosh, it's a 2:10 hour here on Wednesday, getting ready for our Without a Roof show. And I really appreciate Eric Gustafson. I reached out to him earlier to try to get some clarity around a few things that have come up today. And Eric Gustafson is a public works director here in Chico, and he's going to give us a little insight on what that job entails, and I'm going to ask him a couple of questions, pressing questions.
Sure, thank you, Guillermo. It's pretty diverse. I oversee all the maintenance and operation functions within the city of Chico, so fleet facilities, streets and right-of-way maintenance, traffic safety maintenance, the park system, street trees, the sewer collection system, the wastewater treatment plant, and airport operations.
And specific to this conversation, you are responsible, you know, to send out Recology and folks to do trash pickup and stuff around the parks. And
we had some discussion. I actually had a chance to talk a little bit with Joy and Addison Winslow around this topic. But give us some insights on the sanitation drops. I know City Council had a meeting, and many people walked away from that last week's meeting, Eric Gustafson, thinking we were going to get a decent amount of hand washing stations and porta potties. And I understand there was only budgeted amount for one. So maybe fill us in on that.
Oh, no. Yeah, we have more than one. Absolutely. We have 6 additional portable restrooms and hand washing stations that were placed throughout the city of Chico. A handful were prior to the COVID crisis, and then a couple were just, recent to the COVID crisis. And we're actually adding an additional one today at the Jesus Center. So where we currently have portable restrooms that include hand washing stations are at the city parking lot number 7 downtown. That's Salem and 2nd Street, otherwise known as the Transit Center, kind of across from the Madison Bear. Depot Park over off of Cedar between West 3rd and West 5th. The Comanche Creek Greenway in the parking lot kind of on the Park Avenue side. We have one near Lindo Channel on the southwest side of the Esplanade, if you will. Another one more in the downtown corridor at parking lot 1. That's at 2nd Flume Street. Our kind of, a lot of folks know it as the Saturday morning farmers market parking lot. And then one near Windchime Park over off of Old Humboldt Road. And that's kind of in addition to the existing portable restrooms that we normally deploy in Bidwell Park. We have one in Lower Park off the Peterson Drive area, Middle Park by 5 miles. And then we get up into Upper Park where we have one by the Observatory, Horseshoe Lake, Bear Hole, and up on 32 on the Paragon Point Disc Golf Course. So that's a total of 12 with today adding the other one at the Jesus Center due to a kind of a need there. We have a total of 13 portable restrooms and hand washing stations. I should probably mention we have an additional hand washing station in our city plaza as well. Kind of adjacent to the brick-and-mortar restrooms in that facility.
So I think, let me posit it this way, because I think since I've been pretty much involved with this and interviewing Joy and Addison every single week, I think where the real misconception was is I had asked Joy early on, you know, what about these new hand-washing stations? We're looking at new spots to put them, and that was above and beyond, you know, where they were already, the 6 that you'd mentioned specifically. And we've had conversations where we're like, yeah, we're working with Eric Gustafson and we need input, and we're giving him input. We're, you know, I'm giving input. Addison Winslow is giving a lot of input.
Sure.
So we were kind of caught flat-footed when it was like, well, no, we're not going to be putting in anymore. And there's just a little bit of confusion around that.
Yeah, the bulk of these, the original 5 portable restrooms were early on in the year approved by the existing city council, and that was based on a recommendation by the Bidwell Park and Playground Commission. They recommended putting some portable restrooms in some of our creeks and greenways and some additional ones in the park. That recommendation made it to city council. Council heard the recommendation and also approved it, and we identified to put those additional 5 or so out in our greenways and parks, it was going to be about $83,000 a year. So that's the funding that we recently received from City Council at the last meeting through the budget supplemental. So that's funding those existing restrooms for an entire year. Some of the newer ones, you know, we put a hand washing station in City Plaza. Today we're putting a portable restroom and hand washing station at the Jesus Center. And then the Windchime Park location off of Humboldt Road, those were kind of in light of recent happenings with the COVID-19 crisis and just to try to get some, you know, added facilities out there for the public. Again, Guillermo, this is also on top of the existing brick-and-mortar restrooms that we have, 2 that are serviced and cleaned daily. And those are, you know, of course, at Ringgold Park, downtown, City Plaza, north and south 1 mile, Cedar Grove, and then south 5 mile. As well. So there's, you know, there's a handful of existing brick and mortar restrooms that are deployed within the city, the park system as well.
You know, as we had talked offline, you know, before the call, there's obviously a more pressing need than there was pre-COVID, because the city, rightly so, and I give everyone credit for doing it, you know, shelter in place. I mean, you have no place to go to begin with.
Right.
But it's dire because all the businesses are closed. Many of the different places people are, you know, been going to, and as I mentioned, maybe it was just with Joy. Now when I'm asking people, how are things going? The whole conversation shifted a lot of it shifted over the last few weeks, Eric. They're like, sanitation. I haven't had a shower in so long. I can't even, bathroom, I'm using a bucket. And I just would like to get some hope that we can revisit this in an emergency. It's my understanding from talking with folks from advocacy organizations that Mark Orme has a tremendous amount of power in an emergency to kind of say, yeah, you know what? I think we probably do need more restrooms like Comanche Creek. I talked with my friend Addison Winslow, the volunteer coordinator. He said, you guys have scheduled a bunch of, I think it's bike path work. But anyway, you're having to relocate like 15 or 16 people. And now they're all going to be pushed down towards the quote-unquote entrance where there's a bathroom already. I'm not trying to solve things on air, but it's like, boy, you really could use another bathroom down there now because now you're going to have like 50 or 60 people. So who do I talk to kind of ratchet this up a little bit that I think there's a public health and safety issue with not only the sanitation but the trash disposal? What's my avenue?
Sure. I think, you know, myself, my department, and of course Joy, too, who is our homeless outreach and advocate. And it's great to hear this feedback because we're kind of in the infancy stages of this. And we hope that folks can, you know, granted, it's hard to, you know, deploying these bathrooms within the city limits, it's a financial situation. It takes money, of course. And so we want to look at placing them in an area that's sustainable and doesn't draw too many negative impacts for adjacent property owners and, you know, so on and so forth. So there's a bit of a balance. And of course, if there's initiative by our city council to add additional facilities out there, we definitely can do that. We just, of course, need kind of a funding mechanism to sustain it.
Last quick question, because Joy was telling me that she was going to do a ride along with Officer Sandoval today from the Target team. And he was going to, at least as I understand it, possibly make a recommendation on where to put a dumpster or two. Are you familiar with that conversation, or that'll be a request that comes to you once they have that conversation?
Sure, that will make its way to me. Okay. And we have, you know, we have existing trash service by our contractor waste management within Bidwell Park. Of course, as everybody knows, at most picnic sites, there's a trash receptacle. And those are serviced daily. However, we have seen a pretty significant trash load due to kind of the shelter in place scenarios, and we're trying to do what we can to get that picked up as well. And we're, you know, with city staff, and we're also relying on some of the volunteer and outreach groups that are doing so as well. And we're making some headway. We have placed an added dumpster in the park, kind of on the just underneath Highway 99.
Yeah, I put
bridge.
Some stuff in it. We did a cleanup and put some stuff
right.
in it.
Right, yeah. Thank that you was for kind that. Of an area where we saw a lot of accumulation, yeah, so we did place one there. And if there's a need somewhere else, you know, somewhere like Comanche Creek, we could definitely look at doing that.
Well, I thank the guy. I happened to be going through Bidwell Park on my bike, Lower Bidwell Park, as they were dumping those daily, you know, the daily trash cans. And
right.
Maybe a good place to close, Eric Gustafson. I'm very impressed with the response from volunteers from the city, and I'm very impressed with how things look riding the bike path all the way through Bidwell Park and then all the way down to the bike path off the VA. Anyway, it's nice to see because I'm a big nature kind of guy. What would you add to that?
Yeah, no, I agree. We're doing what we can. There's some areas of concern, and we'll bring some different resources there. And, you know, we have had some issues where, you know, of course, there's some bad actors in all scenarios. And you know, we've had to close some of our brick and mortar facilities for an extended period of time just due to vandalism. So we hope that doesn't happen. We hope that people utilize and respect the resources that are out there. But I think overall we're getting through it, and we're doing what we can. And yeah, hats off to the volunteer effort in this community. We really appreciate it. On a normal basis, outside of COVID-19, coordinate with many, many volunteer groups, and we log close to 25,000 hours of volunteerism in the community on an annual basis. And those are just the folks that are coordinated and affiliated with city stuff. So that's substantial, and we cannot do it without them. So hats off to all the volunteers in the community. It's a great feature of Chico.
All righty, Eric Gustafson, thanks so much for taking time away from your day, and have a good rest of your day.
Thank you, Guillermo. Appreciate it anytime.
All right, I'm just about out. I thank everyone for listening. Tomorrow I'll be on the air 6 to 7, and I think I'm going to come back to the story that I was doing before the pandemic hit, the Imagining Community, the community supported agriculture, and Victory Gardens. Actually, Pam Larry's going to be on Sue's show. So listen up. Until next week, have a root, be grateful.